Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? This is Lee from Lee and Keys Real Talk. You know, coming to you on this lovely hump day. Got a couple things to go over tonight. Talk about Connor's performance. Talk about the Macy Barber controversy. Talk about Alexa Grasso missing weight. Talk about what's next for Connor, what Connor should do next, what the UFC should do next with Connor. We're going to talk about a lot of things. I will say a lot of interesting things happened this weekend, but I have to keep it 100. I have to keep it 100 with y'all, the audience. I didn't see any other fights this weekend because it was my birthday weekend, and I was out and about kicking it, having a good time. But I did see the UFC post-fight show. I did watch some highlights, so I do have a little bit of understanding of what happened Saturday. But at this time, I want to introduce my co-host, Keys. What's going on, bro?
Parappa 12, premium Irish whiskey. Man-made
Hello?
Irish whiskey. Only the pure. Hey, hello? Did you hear me?
Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah, I see what you did there.
Jameson is better.
Acting like you couldn't hear me. Well,
Jameson,
I got something for the audience, too. Yeah, I got something for the audience, too. I'm going to just say that neither one of us can really recap the fights because it was Lee's birthday weekend, so he didn't see any of the fights. And me, I physically couldn't see the fights because I was drinking the proper 12 since about 9 p.m. So by the time the main card came on, I couldn't even see the fights. And I was right in front of the screen. So, yes, I have no idea what happened. I was there, but I wasn't there. So, yeah, I couldn't tell you. All I know is that Olenek had a pretty – I remember I could see the Olenek fight, and he had – that was actually a pretty crazy fight right there. Morris Green and Alexei Olenek. That one was a good – that was a – that surprised me. That heavyweight fight, that surprised me right there. And Olenek had a submission victory. I want to say it was the third round. And, yeah, that one was a good scrap. That one really stood out to me. I don't remember the other fights, though.
Yeah, actually, that was a good fight. But I think when we talked about it last week, we actually said that Green would have to keep the fight on the feet for him to have a chance of winning. And lo and behold, he was actually doing pretty well when the fight was on his feet. And once he got taken down, it was over. I was like, wow. But I was really impressed with Olenek. You know, I think he needs to work on his stand-up game. But his submission game is crazy. And I'm going to keep my eye on this guy.
It's not that often that you see a submission late, a submission in a heavyweight fight is kind of uncommon. You really don't see too many submissions in a heavyweight fight. I mean, unless it's like DC or like Frank Mir, you really don't see too many submissions. Or maybe Verdum, but like really, yeah. So like, I was just getting to Verdum. So, but it's really not that many guys. You really look at like the heavyweights, like any fight, you really only see. Heavyweights either going to knock each other out or they're going to get tired after the first round and it's going to go to a decision and both guys are going to be exhausted in the fight. You're going to see that, you know, that's like really, that tells the tale of the heavyweights, you know, in the UFC for about, I'd say 90% of the guys. So yeah, that to see a submission victory and it was late in the fight. I want to say it was like near the end of the fight too. I want to say it was late in the third round, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
And Green was upset too. He looked really upset that he tapped, and you really couldn't even see. you really couldn't even see who tapped. Like, if you seen the moment, it was so crazy because you really couldn't tell who had who where. Like, you really couldn't see. I think they said it was like a reverse armbar or something like that that Olenek got him with. But you really couldn't even see where their whose limbs were whose, because it was like the two guys just looked like a pretzel. Like, I really couldn't. I in that moment, like I said, I could barely see the screen for most of the fights, and I could barely see the screen in that moment. So maybe other people could see it, but I could not figure out what was going on and who had who. And then when the ref called it, apparently somebody tapped, and the only reason I could really tell who it was just because of the reactions from both guys. Green clearly was frustrated, and you could see that on his face and the way he reacted. So that was the only reason I could really tell. But, yeah, that was a good win for Olenek, though.
Yeah, it was a good win by Olenek. I think it actually showcased Green a lot that we should probably keep our eye out on him. But I think one thing about him is he's going to have to be a guy that when he gets taken down, he's going to have to show he can get back to his feet. That's one thing, like you said, about the heavyweight division. There aren't too many guys that are grapplers and jiu-jitsu guys. But when you start fighting the top guys, you got to prepare for that. I thought he tapped. It was a little confusing, but I think once you watch it in slow-mo, and the ref was right on top of it. He did tap. But I think he probably tapped out of panic. You know what I'm saying? Like when Chael Sonnen tapped to Anderson Silva, he didn't tap the tap. He tapped because he panicked. So I think we should keep our eye out on Green, and I want to see what the UFC do with Olenek next. See whether or not he's going to fight a top 10 guy. Top 7 guy. So I think we may have something in Olenek down the road. But
and then
go ahead.
I don't even remember what happened. Like, I guess Holly Holm fought. Apparently Holly Holm fought on the card, but I don't even like recall it. I don't even recall seeing that. So apparently that happened, but from what people are saying, it don't sound like I really missed much. Raquel Pennington reacted to the fight, and from her reaction, it sounds to me like the fight was a snooze. So I really don't mind the fact that I don't remember the fight at all. So that's fine. Shout out to Prophet 12, because if it not for the Prophet 12, I probably would have remembered the fight, but remembering the fight probably would have been more painful than forgetting it. So thank you for Prophet 12 for that.
Actually, I think Pennington, her thing, she couldn't get out the clinch. Holly Holm had her in a clinch for most of the fight, and Holly was doing damage to her in the clinch. And my thing was, okay, you see what her strategy is. Her strategy is to keep the fight at close range, keep you in the clinch, fight out the clinch. You need to take a step back, establish the jab, faint more, don't let her get you in the clinch. And she was like, well, I didn't come into the fight to be in a hug contest. Well, sometimes in the UFC, things happen in a fight where your opponent might do something and they notice that you don't have an answer for it. And Raquel had no answer for the fight being in the clinch. So I understand that, you know, what her frustration could be. But at the same time, is you really wasn't doing anything to advance your position or establish anything in your game plan to stop her from using the clinch to be an offensive weapon. So I don't get her. I get what she was saying as far as being a hug fest, but at the same time, you have to do something to change the tempo of the fight.
Yeah, so.
But
I have no idea.
But moving on to one of the major controversies of the night, the Macy Barber fight, the Roxanne by the Fury fight. Macy Barber going back to Friday, I saw some video that she actually, like, she struggled to make weight prior to this fight. And one thing that we have noticed, if you struggle to make weight in a fight, you tend to struggle in that fight. And she struggled in that fight, Macy did. Hats off to Roxanne Modafferi for coming in with a game plan to not back down from Macy, but to always on high octagon control and make sure she was always moving forward and had Macy retreating. My problem with this fight is when the doctor came in to examine Macy Barber. The doctor comes in and specifically says out of his mouth, she has a partially torn ACL, but she can continue. What the fuck? And I don't like to curse on this show. Why the hell would you allow a fighter to continue with a partially torn knee ligament? First of all, it's the ACL. The fighter was limping around carrying that leg. There was no reason to continue that fight. And I want to say at the time, she was losing majorly, so there was no time to there was no reason to continue that fight. I know a lot of people would go back to the Santos John Jones fight where he tore every ligament at both of his knees, it seemed like, and he continued on. But I would say Santos was in a different position. He was fighting for a title. He was actually, a lot of people had him winning that fight. I think his corner was telling him he was winning that fight. But once he got compromised, you could tell the fight had changed. The fight had changed in momentum towards John. But you have to tip your hat to Santos for going through those five rounds. And I think a person like me looking at it the other way, I think John Jones should have took advantage of it. If they was going to allow him to fight, he should have did some oblique kicks. He should have took him down, made him carry his weight on his knees and stuff like that. But I was so disappointed in the UFC doctor saying that Macy Barber could continue with a partially torn ACL. That's just messed up to me. And Macy get well soon. I think her chances of beating John Jones' record as the youngest UFC champion, I think that doesn't happen. And I think Modafferi, she may have thrown herself into the title picture now, even though she was already highly ranked.
Yeah. That was hilarious because you were like, I had to mute my microphone because I was like, okay, please kill me right now with this. You were like, I don't normally swear on this show. Basically, everybody, what Lee was trying to say was, he was like, so she has a partially torn ACL, and then you're a doctor and you okayed her to continue fighting. Basically, what Lee was saying, what is that statement? What kind of statement is that? That's what he meant to say. Man, that just had me rolling. So I just had to really mute my microphone right there so I could just laugh. Oh, okay. So That, you know, I barely saw these fights, so I don't know. But you know, if Roxanne dominated Macy Barber that bad, and it looks like she did, then she'll probably have some big implications for her next fight, I would say. At least get another big fight. Probably get a top five,
no
or something
doubt.
Like that. There was what other fight was on there? Oh yeah, I remembered Pettis. You know, I didn't really see the Pettis fight, but I saw my boys' reactions to it, and when I did sit down and tune into it, because I was actually making some punch, I think during when his fight was coming on. So I was making some proper 12 lemonade, which was actually so delicious. I just want to do a quick review about the proper lemonade. I just got to talk about the proper lemonade, okay? So it was, I want to say it was 16 parts lemonade, 12 parts proper 12 premium Irish whiskey, man-made Irish whiskey, and a splash of lemon-lime soda. And I might have dabbled with those amounts a little bit because it was very, very strong. And I made like a big punch bowl out of it. And I had that going during my fight party. And that was so delicious. You know, I may have had to add some more lemonade to it just to make it a bit sweeter because the proper 12 hits hard as it is. You know, you have a sip of it and you know, hair grows on your chest. So like when you add that much in there, it's pretty much like a poisonous. It's a poisonous liquid, you know. But anyways, yeah. The proper was the proper lemonade came out absolutely delicious, and So I was making the proper punch as the Pettis fight was. I think they were walking out during that time, but I missed like pretty much the entire fight. But when I had sat down, I had just seen, like, I think Pettis had just gotten tapped. Like, he just tapped Pettis out, like, right as I took a seat and, like, had poured my drink and took a seat. Like, I guess Pettis had just lost to the Ferreira guy. So, yeah, that's all I saw of that fight. I completely missed that one. Only just at the very end had I just walked into it. So, I don't know, man. Pettis got to think about this because, you know, He was on top of the world, you know, about a year ago. He was on top of the world, and you know, he just come off, I think, the fight in Tony Ferguson, so he was pretty much right there at lightweight. And then he lost to Ferguson, and then he was on top of the world. He knocked out Wonderboy. And I was like, oh, man, like Pettis at welterweight is just about to be crazy. Maybe he, like, found, you know, the right weight for him. And because Pettis always says how, like, he doesn't really know, like, his camp. Like, they don't really know, like, if he's found the right. Like, they kind of always move weight classes to see, like, where's, like, really the perfect fit. And I've made some critiques about Pettis in the past about every time he loses a big fight in a certain weight class, he moves weight classes again, and then he'll win a couple, and then he'll lose the big fight, and he'll move weight classes again. So it seems like that has happened again because he was on top of the world, and then he lost. He looked pretty bad versus Nate Diaz, and Diaz hadn't fought in 3 years, and he looked bad versus him. And then he just fought that guy who I'd missed the entire fight, but apparently – He lost via submission in that fight. So, and that was at 155. So I don't know what to say for Pettis because he just lost 170 and then he went down to 155 and then he lost again. So I don't know. Maybe he's going to go and call out your boy Diego Sanchez now and get that super fight going. What do you think?
I think Pettis needs to fight at 170. I think this going up and down in weight just isn't working. You can't keep putting your body through the stress of going from 170 to 155. He looked good at 170. I thought he had found a home at 170. But I will say this. I think Keith Lee is going to lose his next fight. He's fighting Charles Oliveira. I think Oliveira is going to beat Keith Lee. Then that sets up the fight that I wanted to see last year. We could have Anthony Pettis versus Keith Lee at either 155 or 170. Both of them are for that 170. Both of them are for that 155. I would rather see them fight at 170. Or we could do this 165 thing that people was clamoring for 2 years ago. But I'd rather see both of them fight at 170. And but this is the time that, you know, me and Keys, we really like this part about UFC. When young guys come out and they make a statement, when they beat a veteran, I like that because I like to see the fresh blood, the up-and-comers snatch their opportunity to beat an established guy. And Diego Ferreira, he didn't just beat Anthony Pettis. He dominated Pettis in that fight. From the highlights I saw, when I went back and I actually watched the highlights on ESPN Plus of the fight, Pettis couldn't do anything against Diego Ferreira. They said Ferreira is undefeated since 2015 or something like that, 2017, something like that. So, but he's been injured. So I think the main thing with him is staying healthy. You have to stay healthy to stay relevant within the UFC. A lot of people say your best ability is availability. And I think in the UFC, that's true because I'm going to just throw this name out there. Keys probably don't want to hear me say this. But Tyron Woodley is one guy that I haven't seen him fight since he lost to Usman. And it's like, once you out of sight, people forget about you. And we should never forget about a former champion being one fight removed from losing a belt. So, Diego Ferreira put on a good fight. He looked good. Pettis needs to go back to 170, become comfortable fighting at 170. And there are a lot of big fights to be made at 170. If everything plays out the way I think it is, then maybe sometime this year we'll get Keith Lee versus Anthony Pettis, hopefully at 170, but I'm thinking it'll probably be more at 155.
Well, Keith Lee versus Oliveira is a savage fight. I do know that. That is a very crazy fight. And I'm pretty sure I went off about that already on the last show, so I don't want to get into that. But speaking of which, what you were saying was, you know, Woodley's actually fighting Leon Edwards.
Yep.
And I'm sure you're very excited for that one. Because weren't you saying Woodley was running from Leon Edwards?
Yep.
Well, guess
and
what?
I stand by.
He's still running, though. He's going to be in the cage when I'm running, right?
Well, I look at it like this. I think Woodley had no choice but to take the fight. Because Leon Edwards is looked at as a guy that should be challenging for the belt in 2020. And your boy Woodley keeps saying that, you know, he's one fight removed from fighting for the belt. And I think if he beat Edwards, it's true. But I really don't think he wanted Edwards. Because Edwards is a bad matchup for Woodley because of his fighting style. Edwards is the John Jones of the 170 division. He fights like a smaller John Jones. He's very versatile. His elbows are killer. He doesn't make any mistakes in the striking game, but I haven't seen him taken down either. But we haven't seen Woodley use his wrestling. We haven't seen Woodley use his wrestling since he became champion. So if we can get Woodley go back to using his wrestling, then I think if he takes Edwards down, Edwards has no – I don't think he has any chance of beating Woodley if Woodley uses his wrestling. But with that being said, I know you're going to disagree with me on this, but I like Woodley when he was chasing the belt. When he was chasing the belt, he was more exciting. I thought he fought a fan-friendly style. But once he became champ, it seemed to me he became passive and he was always hurt after each title fight. But not going to make a prediction on this fight yet, but I don't think this is a fight that Woodley wanted to take. But I think it's the fight that UFC probably was like, hey, if you win this fight, you'll get another shot at Usman.
You know, to this day, I still have never seen Leon Edwards fight. So, I still have no idea what this guy does. So, I'm just waiting to see it. And what better fight for me to watch him for the first time versus my boy Tyron Woodley, who was the most dominant UFC champion for like 5 years.
Man, remember that? I don't know why you keep saying that, man.
Hey. Woodley fought the number one contender every time. No, what other champion always fights the number one contender? Everybody always wants a super fight, or they want the number 10 guy, or some other Joe Schmo that we don't even know why he's fighting for the title. Woodley fought the number one guy every time. Is that true or false?
Wasn't Demetrius Johnson the champion during Woodley's run also? Wasn't John Jones a champion also during a part of Tyron Woodley's run too? I think Stipe was a champion during Tyron Woodley's run. I mean, I get
yeah,
it, that's
but,
your boy, but you killing me with this most dominant though, man.
Yeah, but even all right, but see, that actually was a compliment what you just said. Because you just paired Woodley with the best heavyweight ever, the best light heavyweight ever, and arguably the best, statistically the best champion ever. So that's like three all-time greats, and you just put Woodley with those three all-time greats. So I think you just complimented Woodley. So actually, I don't even have a rebuttal for that.
Yeah, I think you would take that as a compliment because that's your boy. But all I'm saying is you can't call him the most dominant, being that those guys were champions at the same time as him, and they were more dominant than him. Especially DJ. I'll say DJ was probably more dominant than him. We both know John. Only reason I won't say John was more dominant than him because John was off and on. During most of Tyron Woodley's reign. And I want to say Stipe may have got the belt during the later part of Woodley's reign. But I would say during the time that Woodley was a champion, I would still say DJ was more dominant than him.
Yeah, I'm just going to chill because sometimes you say things and I feel I'm being attacked. I don't feel like I'm being attacked with that statement. I feel safe.
Oh,
right,
man.
Now.
Nah, man. It's never an attack. It's just that I'm just coming at you from another angle, giving you another angle to look at. I mean, I know that's
no,
your voice.
I said I don't feel attacked.
Yeah, but when you say most dominant, man, you know that just drives me crazy. And I think you do it on purpose.
I don't even think what you just said is at all insulting to Woodley. I don't even think that's that whole thing you just said is not a cause for alarm. I don't even think Woodley would be. I don't even think Woodley himself would even raise an eyebrow to what you just said. I don't even think he would, because you really look at it, those are three all-time greats. So it, Steve, I don't even need to go into it, because, and actually, ironically, a lot of times when you see Woodley with the media or he does an interview, he referenced those guys a lot. Even when a lot of people would say, when Woodley used to say the fans didn't like him, when Woodley Woodley say that he was the most ill-treated black champion ever. But then his argument shifted to that, he kind of like overlooked the whole scene and said, look at the history of the way the UFC has treated their black champions. And then he said, Demetrius Johnson, no, he asked the interviewer, he said, who's the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world? And I forget what they said. It was the wrong answer. He said, Demetrius Johnson. And look at the way the UFC markets Demetrius Johnson. So that, he used to say a lot of things like that and has referenced John Jones many times. So I don't even think he would really raise an eyebrow to that statement, because I think he respects those guys a ton. And those are all-time greats. Stipe is all-time great, so that's fine. But Woodley did fight the number one contender, though. So if we're going to look at the recent champions, a lot of the champions, they get the belt and then they call for a super fight. Woodley get the belt and he fought everybody who was right there. Regardless of how the fight turned out, regardless of if you thought it was a snooze, because there was some of them that were a snooze. You know, his second fight with Wonderboy was extremely underwhelming fight. That was a snooze. I was shocked at how the lack of anything that even happened in the fight. It was a extremely boring. That one and the Maya fight were very boring. But he still always fought the number one guy. So that you can't take away. And that's a big reason why I like it. Huh?
I said, no, you can't take that away. I think, he did fight the next guy up. You have to respect that. But at the same time, I want to say Joe Silva was still the matchmaker in the UFC at the time Woodley was the champion. And that's one thing I have noticed, that somebody actually pointed it out on Twitter the other day, that ever since Joe Silva stepped down as the matchmaker, that the UFC has been all over the map as far as making fights. But I want to go back to one of the things you pointed out about Woodley, and I agree with him at the time that he said this, was that he was probably the most he said the UFC treated him bad as champ. And I buy into that wholeheartedly, and I buy into the fact that the UFC undermarketed Demetrius Johnson. And I also bow to the fact that the only black champion the UFC has ever put any faith in is Daniel Cormier. But with that being said, you know, I think Woodley has said some things about Dana White that Dana White didn't like. I think Woodley has also probably, you know, been on the shelf more than Dana White would prefer, especially with him being a champion, because it seemed like every time he will fight, he'll come out to fight with an injury and he'll be out a while. And I think that drove Dana crazy. But, like I said, you know, you can't argue with him fighting the next guy. He did do that when he was a champion. But my argument or my issue has always been that he has become a lack. He was a – when he was fighting to get to the belt, he was exciting to watch. When he became the champion, he became kind of sort of lackluster to me.
Well, I think that kind of brings it back to the next one, because with Edwards, it'd be the first time he's fought not, you know, as not the champion.
True.
In a really long, in a pretty long time. So we'll see what happens. He might wrestle. He might wrestle in, or maybe he doesn't wrestle. We'll see. But this is the first non-champion Woodley that we've seen in like 5 years. So, hey, I'm looking forward to that one.
Okay, quick question for you. So he was a champ. He was a champion for 5 years.
Well, I know his first title defense was in 2016, so it might have been more like 4 years, but I'm just saying 5 years, go ahead.
So in those 4 years, he fought Wonderboy twice, Damian Maia, Darren Till, and Usman. So he had five places. Okay. That's not that bad, but it's not the greatest either.
I think I'm off with my math here. Actually, I didn't eat that much for dinner. My Woodley facts are a little bit distorted right now. Actually, his first defense, because he fought Robbie Lawler, was, I believe, summer 16. He fought Robbie Lawler for the belt, and he knocked him out, so he got the title. His first defense was Holiday 2016. That was the first Wonderboy fight. I think that was UFC 205. That was the first title defense. So you want to say, if you want to say how long he was champion, you could say summer 2016 until basically March 2019, actually, because that was when he lost to Usman. So you right there, if you wanted to say June 2016 to March, he was champion for 2 years and 9 months.
Okay, so 5 fights in 2 years ain't bad. I can't be mad about that, especially with his injury history. I guess you can't be mad with 5 fights in 2 years.
Well, because it was like the first 3 fights that he did, and this is the thing that I always say, was in the first 9 months that he was wait, let me think about this. Yeah, the first 3 title defenses he did was in the first 9 months that he was champion, because you had – if it was June or July, either way, you only had 5 months. And then the Maya was in, I think, July. Okay, so within the first – yeah, I don't know. I'm confusing myself here. But within the first year, he had 3 title defenses.
Okay. That's not bad.
But then with all the, you know, things that had happened with the – you know, he hurt his rotator cuff, and then, you know, I think he, like, broke his hand off somebody's face at one point. And then with all, like, I feel like him not having a good connection with Dana White made it a lot harder for him to get fights, because I feel like they just didn't like each other. that much. I think that put a wrench in things a lot of the times for him. But I don't know what happened behind the scenes. I just know there was a lot of stuff that there was definitely some things that prevented him from fighting more. But yeah, I look forward to that fight though. Non-champion Woodley, that's gonna be first time we've seen that in like 4 years.
Well, as long as he go back to being the Woodley that was chasing the belt, I like the way he fought then, because he was letting it all hang out. He was using every tool in his toolbox, and he was excited. And if he goes back to that guy, I'm all in on it. So, but we have to talk about one of your up-and-comers that you actually featured. I think you wrote about her, Alexa Grasso. I got her mixed up with somebody else. But we got to talk about Alexa Grasso. Alexa Grasso was slated to fight Claudia Cadea on Saturday. She missed weight by 5.5 pounds. I know me and you, we take missing weight as a sign of unprofessionalism. Missing weight by that much weight, man, oh my God. I was so disappointed in her. I was like, man, the UFC has to come up with a way to punish fighters for missing weight. Because Claudia trained, she made weight, she don't get paid because she ain't fighting. So all that's like wasted time for her. You know, I can see if the athletic commission allowed Grasso to fight, because of course they was gonna make her forfeit, you know, maybe 20% of her purse to Claudia or whatever. I understand that. But man, the UFC has to find a way to punish these fighters for missing weight. I would say by more than 3 pounds. If you miss weight by more than 3 pounds, the UFC has to find a way to punish you and punish you substantially.
Yeah, that was kind of bad, because I think at flyweight, I don't know if it's for every weight class, but I thought I read something that said at flyweight, if you miss weight by over 3 pounds, then it's the fight, they cancel the fight. There's no way for the other fighter to like opt in and say no, like I'll still fight her. But like we could take 20% of her, or you know, a percentage of her purse. I don't think I could be wrong with that, but I thought I read that they said that's not an option at the flyweight division. If you're over 3 pounds, the fight can't happen. So maybe it was just maybe that was just a rule with the Nevada commission. I feel like
I think that's Nevada.
Yeah, that could be a thing, but they, you know, there's some fights that we would not have ever seen. There was some really great fights, all-time great fights that we would not have seen if weight cutting rules were very strict. Like we would not have seen Yoel Romero and Whitaker too, if they didn't let Romero fight after missing weight. Like that one was just like one off the top of my head, but you know, a fighter missing weight by, I think it was like 5.5 pounds she missed weight by, is just kind of like, you're just really throwing it overboard with that. And that was just disappointing because, you know, I really wanted to see Claudia. I really wanted to see Claudia fight, and I didn't get to. And that was a sad time for me with that. That was a sad time.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you about the part that maybe some fights we probably wouldn't have got the same, but at the same time, it's like, I think it was at one point in time, everybody that missed weight was actually winning. And it was kind of crazy that happened. Maybe it was just, you know, kind of fluky. But I know that had happened to everybody that had missed weight. They was actually winning their fight. So, but it's sad. But I think with Grasso, one thing is about women fighters that men we would never understand is if the week of the fight, they happen to come on their cycle. Women normally gain water weight with their cycle, and there's really nothing they can do about that physically. I think that the doctors and the UFC will probably have to take that into consideration if that was to happen. So, you know, maybe that happened. We may have to give her the benefit of the doubt, but at the same time, 5.5 pounds is, that's a lot. But maybe we get this fight sometime down the road. But let's give the people what they want. Let's talk about the return of Conor McGregor to the octagon on Saturday with a 40-second knockout of Donald Cerrone. And what are your thoughts on the fight, and what should Conor do next?
Okay, so off top, I still have some Papa 12 that I need to finish. I bought 2 bottles for my fight party. And like I was telling you guys about earlier, I made some Proper 12 lemonade that I found a recipe for, and it was absolutely delicious. And somebody on Twitter asked me if it really was delicious or if I was just saying that. And I just thought to myself, no, I'm not just saying that. It was absolutely delicious, because I see what you tried to do there. And no, that this is not that. It was a high level lemonade punch. It was high level, just like that finish of Cowboy. It was a high level finish. And one thing that I wanted to say is that I've been seeing a lot of talk about the fight having been fixed, and I just don't understand where that comes from, because what would be the goal in fixing that fight? I just don't understand why that would be. I just don't like it. These are the same people that, y'all people that saying the fight is fixed, gotta be the same people that say the earth is flat. Like, y'all are the same people. Like, y'all got tinfoil hats on. Like, y'all, like, got these underground, you know, caves with, like, you know, 100-pound bags of rice, you know, preparing for the apocalypse. You know, this is some conspiracy theorist, wild, you know, propaganda. This is madness. Saying that fight is fixed. I just want to put that out there right now, and I don't even want to spend time debating with you about whether you think the fight is fixed. I'm just going to go ahead and hope that you don't believe that baloney, that the fight would be fixed. Just because it only lasted 40 seconds does not mean that the fight was fixed. This is not the first time that we have seen a fight. And I feel like a lot of the people who would say that are people who don't even really watch the UFC, because if you did watch it, you would know that this is not the first time we have seen a knockout in under a minute. You know, just a couple months ago, we just saw Jorge Masvidal get a knockout in 5 seconds. You know, we've seen Ronda Rousey get knockouts in, like, you know, less than 30 seconds. You know, we've seen a lot of fast knockouts. So I don't even know what that comes from, saying that. And I swear it's got to be either extremist, you know, conspiracy theorist propaganda, or it's people who just don't really watch the UFC and they're not used to the fast knockouts, because we have seen many fast finishes in fights. So for that one to be fixed, I just don't understand where the ground is that you are standing on while saying that. I don't believe you're standing on any ground. There is no ground to stand on with that statement. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people thought that the fight was fixed because of all the stuff that Cowboy was saying. Everybody knows that the way to beat Conor is not by standing and banging with him. The way to beat Conor is making him fight off his back, carry your weight, make him turn him into a wrestler instead of a striker. And everything that was coming out of Cowboys camp was, I'm going to stand and bang with this guy. You know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that on my feet. And a lot of people took that as if the UFC, you know, may have paid him a little bit of money to employ this strategy. Me personally, I just think that Cowboy is a guy that's stubborn and basically he just didn't employ a good game plan in this fight. When he got rocked in the beginning of the fight, what will most fighters do? Most fighters would normally step back, dance around the octagon until they get their bearings back. Because we all know Conor really ain't going to put you in a clinch. So, you know, there's a lot of things that Cowboy could have did to get his bearings about himself. And he didn't do it, especially to be a veteran fighter. But that's neither here nor there. Conor actually did some things in the fight that, you know, that I found very interesting, especially with the shoulder strikes that were very effective. He was patient with his strikes. I mean, it was 40 seconds, but he didn't rush in, you know, wild and stuff like that. You know, he was very strategic with his strikes. It was a good performance by Conor. And I tweeted that I don't think the UFC is going to put him in a fight against grapplers or wrestlers. I think they would not do that in the future. I think all his fights will be against stand-up guys that are known for their stand-up game, because I think they have to understand that they have to protect the pot of gold. But if you decide to put him in championship fights, most of the champions grapple. So when they risk him losing a championship fight to a grappler, I say no. I say they will probably have him. I would say his next three fights will most likely be Justin Gaethje, followed by Masvidal, followed by the Diaz trilogy fight. And then you may get him maybe fighting, rematching Khabib, which I don't see him faring any better. Or you might see him step up and get a title shot against Usman, which I don't see him winning either. But I just see the UFC protecting him by giving him favorable matchups. And fans can't be mad about that. They got to realize that the UFC is a business. And Conor brings in big business. I mean, you know, just got to be realistic about it.
And the thing is, too, is that Cowboys camp, there was a quote that came out from Cowboys camp, like, during fight week. It might even been, like, a week before. It might have been a week before fight week. And this that they said, this statement that came out from Cowboys camp that they said was the moment that I knew that they were doomed in this fight. What they said was, is that all they said, all we really have to worry about is a left hand.
Yep.
All we have to worry about is a left hand. Are you people, what? Are you people gone? Man, like, I hope everybody's eating good over there at that Cowboy Ranch, you know, BMF Arena, or whatever he trains at over there. I hope they're all eating, you know, getting their daily calories, because that statement is, like, is just, oh, my God. Like, I would not expect professionals at this level to make such a senseless statement like that. Like, it, I don't even understand where this came from, where people say if he can't land the left hand, then that's all. It makes it like that's his only weapon, and that was very much disproven. Cowboy found out the hard way that it's not only about the left hand. And when I watched it back in slow-mo, somebody posted a video. I watched it back, and McGregor, when they got close, McGregor threw the left hand. Cowboy ducked it, and when he ducked it, he shot for a takedown. And in the midst of his shot for the takedown, McGregor actually kind of, like, I don't know if he, like, leaped a little bit. Like, it wasn't really a flying knee, but, like, his knee just connected with, like, I don't know if it connected with the body of Cowboy, but it landed, though. Like, McGregor's knee was right there. I'd have to watch the video back. I don't know if McGregor's knee hit Cowboy's head or was it hit his body. But it made good contact while Cowboy was shooting for the takedown after McGregor missed the left hand. So, and that was the beginning of the end, where Cowboy got hit with the knee. Like I said, I don't know if it was a knee to the body or if it was a knee to the head, but I know there was a knee to the head at some point that came afterwards. And then there was the shoulder strikes too. There was like three or four shoulder strikes that were there. Cowboy got hit with everything. He got hit with a strike from everything. The only thing he didn't get hit was a leg kick. If he got hit with a leg kick, then he really got hit with every possible limb that McGregor could have hit him with. So that, he really found out the hard way. It's not just worrying about a left hand. And that, I just feel like, was not a smart statement to make. And to think that that's all you train for really just makes me question the guys that these guys are training with, because I can't imagine a professional saying something like that. It just seems so crazy to me that you would make that kind of assumption.
And that's what my point was about all the stuff that he was saying leading up to the fight, man. It just struck me as a guy that he wasn't going to win the fight. I don't know why he left Winklejohn, but at least Winklejohn, at least it seemed like they prepared him better for his fights. Whereas now, I think he runs his own camp, and, you know, it's just guys in there that's there to advise him, and that's not a smart move. And yeah, when he said that, one thing they had to worry about was the left. I was like, yep, he's gonna lose, and then it ended up playing out. It was just disrespectful to Conor. I mean, you did see Conor go 10 rounds of Floyd Mayweather with more than just the left hand. I mean, come on, man. But,
and he did get hit with a head kick, too. I forgot. He actually head kicked Cowboy. I forgot about the head kick.
Yeah. But when he hit Cerrone with the knee, Cerrone wasn't going for the takedown. He kind of stumbled. He ducked his left hand, and he stumbled, and he ran into the knee. And I was I was like, that would have been the perfect time to actually go for the takedown, because you already had changed levels. He actually stumbled and then ate the knee. So it was on accident. But I know we are probably right at our time, but what you want to see, who do you want to see next for Connor?
So I didn't even get to just say my take, but it'll just be real quick, is that I thought the performance was unbelievable, and there's a lot of naysayers out there that I've just been roasting lately because 2020 is just a roasting session, so I'm sorry, but I just got to do it because I can't handle the things that people say sometimes, and I just can't let it slide. In 2019, I let so many things slide because I don't like to argue with people. I'm not really someone who likes to argue, so I'll just like I'm kind of passive most of the time. But some of the things y'all saying about my boy McGregor is just really what has been getting under my skin lately, and I have to just sound off on some people because it doesn't make sense what y'all say. So that is that. The performance was unbelievable, and I think I'd like to see him fight Justin Gaethje. You know, I called for that fight since October 2018, after he lost to Khabib. I said the next day on our show he should fight Gaethje. So, you know, that one, if up to me, I'd want to see that one next. Also wouldn't mind seeing him rematch Justin Poirier. I feel like that one's right there. I mean, Poirier is number two. McGregor's number three, so why not just go? I mean, you already have Khabib. If you can't get the Gaethje fight, then let's just do Poirier because Khabib, you already have Khabib, and Tony isn't going to be for a couple more months anyway. So, and McGregor come out unscathed from the Cowboy fight. He didn't even absorb one single strike. You know, Cowboy threw one strike and it didn't land. McGregor did not even get hit at all with anything. So I wouldn't be surprised if he makes a quick turnaround. People are saying, you know, people are assuming they're not going to see him fight till summer. I don't think it's going to be that long, to be honest. I really don't think he's going to sit out 6 months after a fight like that. You know, I think he expected it was going to go a couple rounds. Like during the press conference, he said, I would like to acquire rounds in here. So if Donald can keep up and he can take, he can roll with the punches and he keeps going, then I'll welcome the fight to be, I'll welcome the rounds. You know, and so I think he'll want to turn around pretty quick. So I could see, Justin Gaethje, I feel like is there. I want to see that. I want to see the Poirier rematch. Those are probably the first two that come to mind. And those are both lightweight fights, though, so we'll see what happens. There's some guy, you know, I like the fact that he called out Paul Felder. No one's talking about the fact McGregor actually kind of called out Paul Felder. That was so funny. Did you realize that? Dude called out Paul Felder. He's like, and that fool at the desk. And I didn't know who he was talking about at first. And then I was like, oh damn, like Paul Felder from the commentary table. So, yeah, that's actually kind of crazy because that's the kind of call out that I would get excited for. But people would tell me, oh, we'll never see that fight. Felder's not big enough of a name. But with that call out, I feel like it brings it to reality a bit more, because if he, you know, that moment created it, that created that energy is now there. So that I wouldn't mind seeing that fight too. McGregor Felder, hey, call me crazy. The proper Irish animal versus the Irish dragon. Ireland will love that one. Ireland versus Ireland. I don't know. I feel like that's a hit right there. That's a hit and a half. So, yeah, those three, I love those three right there. And then I don't really care about, like, the welterweight stuff. The Masvidal, I don't really care about him fighting Masvidal. I mean, if they do it, then cool, but I'm really not really caring so much about that right now. The Diaz thing, I'm not really caring about the Diaz thing. It's probably those three fights. I like those three fights right there. I don't really know about all this other stuff, though.
Yeah, but I think 170 is gonna be his weight class. He said that he don't want to have to cut weight. He says he feels bigger and stronger. He hasn't lost any speed, and basically the not having to cut weight part was the most important thing. I know his coach Kavanaugh said that they're going to try to get back in the octagon before summer, so. We'll see what happens. I think if it's before summer, I think it's going to be Gaethje because he's the only fighter basically out there that doesn't have a fight lined up that's probably in the top five. So I think that's the fight they'll probably make next. I don't know about the Poirier fight because he beat Poirier so soundly the last time they fought that I really don't see that being an option. So, but, you know, we covered a lot of stuff tonight, man. Talked about Conor. We talked about Whitley and Edwards. Talked about Macy Barber controversy. Talked about Grasso missing weight. Man, we talked about a lot tonight, man. Any closing words for the people?
Yeah, my closing word is going to be a little different this time. My closing word is that, you know, y'all got to hit me up on Twitter, at Keys Real Talk. I had changed my Twitter handle multiple times, you know, recently over the past, like, 6 months or something like that. I had played around with my at handle, but this time it's back to the original Keys Real Talk where it all started because this is real talk all the time. That's what we do. So Keys Real Talk is back, and I'm talking my shit. Excuse my language. I'm talking my stuff. And I cannot – there's certain things that I can just not accept. So and especially the McGregor slander right now, I cannot accept it. Because the people will say that you know, the people said that McGregor took 15 months off was too long of a layoff. He was going to have ring rust. He was going to lose. And they also said that he was not relevant because he hadn't fought in 15 months. We don't even remember the last time he fought. But the funny thing is that Khabib actually didn't fight. After his McGregor fight, it took him just under a year to fight again after the McGregor fight, okay? But y'all, though, would say that Khabib is relevant, but he basically fights once a year. But McGregor was irrelevant because he didn't fight for 15 months, just over a year. So I feel like there's a lot of double standards, and I just want to point it out. Because I think it's BS what a lot of people say. So at me with all that stuff, and we'll get into it. And then there'll be some roasting sessions to be passed around. I got the roast cooked for all of y'all. So I'm just playing though. So yeah, I appreciate everybody listening to our show. And I'm gonna toast some proper lemonade for all y'all. Everybody gets a sip of the proper lemonade. I'm passing it around as we speak. Take a nice big sip. It's unbelievable. And that's all I got.
Well, I'm hoping Proper 12 is going to be one of our sponsors. As much as you have talked about them tonight, hopefully you got something lined up where they'll start sponsoring our show. So, you know, that'll be nice. But, you know, with that being said, you know, it wasn't the best of cards. It wasn't the worst of cards. But it was a return to the octagon for Conor, which the UFC basically, you know, laid out the red carpet and all that. But that being said, we got a lot of fights coming up here in the next couple weeks. I want to say February 8th, we get John Jones versus Dominique Reyes. Looking forward to that. And we get Shevchenko versus Kuhagan. I think that's her name. That's on the same card. So there's a lot of stuff coming up in the UFC. And probably the next time we have a show, me and Keys will actually come back to Conor McGregor. Because there's been a lot of talk about him getting back in the boxing ring. But that we'll hold off on that. Until next time, thanks for listening to Lee and Keys Real Talk. Live, love, laugh. Live your life. Have one good laugh every day and tell somebody you love them. That being said, Lee and Keith signing off. Peace.